You just think we just, you know, whatever happens, we just shit another player. And everything's going to be perfect. All of our fans think that. You all think that. That's what you write about.
You don't want to be here. There's a specific reason. Not really. You know, I think we did a poor job recruiting. If guys are coming in and immediately walking out the door because it was something different than what they thought it would be. We lied to them during recruiting, or we sold them on a dream that wasn't true.
Certainly, like I said, coach our kids to do the right thing and play with poise, play with confidence, play with dignity, play with class. At the same time, we're not going to take anyone's shit either.
We want to be a big, fast, dominating, aggressive, relentless football team that nobody in the SEC wants to play.
Now, that's also a second in the West, baby.
Yes, sir.
We're ever getting excited about second. From now on, it's first, okay?
All I want to do is fucking eat! I want you to eat! I want you to eat! I want you to want this shit! Do you want it? Do you want it? Show me!
Bunch of it did it again!
Welcome into the latest edition of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter, and I'm normally joined by my cousin Shane, who's skipping out on this one. He said he's got a work function. He said it's at a bar, though, and I know Shane's not a bartender, so I'm calling bullshit on that one. But we can drink without Shane, I'll tell you that much. All right, so like I said, this is going to be a solo edition, sort of. I got a guest lined up, really good guest here. So, I wanted to give you guys some insight on the Missouri coaching search, because that's one that's kind of... it's been really hard to put my finger on, know who's out there. There is, of course, some speculation. We'll get into that in just a moment here. But, I really wanted to get someone that was really knew the program, knew the particulars, very familiar with it up there. So reached out to TJ Moe, former Missouri receiver, who you can find on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all of those, at TJ Moe 28. This is a really great interview. It gives us some insight into Missouri, who they should be looking at, the kind of coach that Missouri needs to succeed up there in the SEC, his thoughts on the job, everything that goes with it. So let's jump over to our guest, TJ Moe. All right, we're pleased to be joined by TJ Moe, of course, the former standout Missouri receiver. He was a team captain there, played in the Big 12 and the SEC. He's going to give us a lot of insight here on the Missouri coaching search. So I think that's one of the more fascinating ones going on around the nation, obviously in the SEC as well. He's a co-host of 590 The Fan, KFNS Radio there in St. Louis. He's a contributor of the Big 550 KTRS, also there in Missouri. So TJ, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man, anytime. How are you?
I'm doing great. So, the first thing I wanted to start with, I know you had, a relationship there with Barry Odom. I know he was on your radio show all the time. So, how surprised were you that they actually let him go? I know, obviously by the results there, 6-6, that's not good enough at Missouri. There were so much high hopes going into the season, but hell, it was only, what was it, a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, they're in first place in the East. Everything's going, it looked like they were going well, and I had no indication that Barry Odom was on the hot seat. So I just want to get your quick thoughts on how big of a surprise that was to you.
You sort of hit on the reason that Jim Sturt gave for why he fired Barry Odom, and that was what he kept saying over and over, what he said during his press release, and then when he actually had his press conference, was said, we really had a lot of momentum coming into the season. We were able to land Kelly Bryant, who ended up being obviously a major disappointment, not only in performance, but he couldn't stay healthy. And then you had a team with a lot of returning starters and a schedule that was incredibly favorable. I mean, Missouri finished 6-6, and most people thought they really, they did. They struggled down there, lost 5 games straight. And 3 of their losses were Vanderbilt, Kentucky, who we saw, it's Kentucky's backup quarterback and such, and then Wyoming. That's a 9-win season if you just beat 3 relatively bad teams, comparatively with talent and such, on your schedule. So he kept using the phrase, we really had a lot of momentum, we just felt like we needed to make a change. And that is ultimately why, right? Because if Missouri had played a tough schedule and their expectations were 7 or 8 wins and you came up with 6, okay, you probably don't make a change. But I was one of the, I think many people who thought, you know, this team should probably be 8-0 headed into Georgia. And looking back, they should have been, right? It's like they ended up 5-3, and you lost to Wyoming, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt, the three teams that I just mentioned. So they should have been 8-0. Am I surprised that they ended up firing him? No, especially when the sanctions came down and the first announcement that Jim Sterk said was, you know, we're going to lose $8 to $10 million this year, especially if Georgia pulls the upset on LSU, because that likely means both of them are getting in the college football playoff. That means it's probably more likely $10 million than $8 million that Missouri does not get a chance to be a part of this season and sharing the revenue. But what he said was, we're going to take out a loan from the institution, meaning, I think a lot of schools are not like this, and most people don't know this about Missouri, but Missouri's athletic department is completely self-sufficient. So they do not take a dollar from the university. In fact, they give money to the university. And so they're actually taking a $10 million loan out, similar to what they did back in 2012 when they left the Big 12 for the SEC. They didn't get the Big 12 payouts for the last season, and you know, you had to pay a penalty for leaving and all that sort of stuff. And so they took out and then slowly paid back that money to the institution. They're taking out $10 million here. So what that means is that they now had the money to pay the Barry Odom buyout, which was $2.85 million, and then another, you know, between $1.5 million and $2 million for the staff. And so, you know, and there's a lot of offsets there as well, right? It's like, if Barry Odom gets a job at Virginia Tech, which I expect him to do under Justin Fuente since it's Bud Foster's last year, and if he's making $900,000, then you take that off of the $2.85 million, right? There's offsets in the language. So all that's the financial breakdown of it all. And so not only are they not going to be coming up short because of the loan, they're going to be on probation for 3 years. They also, if they don't get any trouble during that 3 years, recoup half of that money. So maybe if they end up losing out on $10 million, they'll get $5 million back at the end of that three-year period. So the money is potentially still there for Missouri to get by during this time. They made that announcement before they fired Barry Odom, right? Because it was known before the Friday game against Arkansas that the sanctions were going to be upheld. When they made that announcement, I think most people around Missouri thought that it was a pretty good indication that Jim Sterk, who did not hire Barry Odom, Mac Rhodes, the athletic director for Baylor now, hired him and then ran immediately. He left. Actually, it was announced on SEC Media Day 2017 that he left. Barry Odom was blindsided during that. And so, anyway, he was never his guy. In my opinion, I think Jim Sterk always has wanted his own guy. He's never been a huge believer in Barry Odom, and kind of the first chance that he had to go get his own guy, he did.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you went to Jim Sterk, because that was my next question there. How much faith do these Missouri fans, Missouri alums, former players like yourself, how much faith do you have in Jim Sterk to make a solid hire here? I know he's had some questionable football hires at Washington State, but I believe he's also had, you know, some good basketball hires at San Diego State, Washington State. Obviously a different animal here, but just how much confidence do you have that Missouri's going to land the right guy if Jim Sterk's making the hire?
Well, I think the one thing that Jim Sterk does really well is he has the people around him who do not give things away. Because the people that I know that are most connected to knowing what's going on have no idea what's happening right now in the coaching search. So that, you tip your cap to him for that, because that's really hard to do in today's college football. Mm-hmm. The hire that everybody tries to point to, the Jim Sterk supporters, and I'm not a Jim Sterk supporter or a critic. I just want my university to do well, right? So I hope Jim Sterk succeeds, because I hope Missouri succeeds. That's the end. I like Jim Sterk. I know him, but I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to make a case for him either way here. I think a lot of people point to Rocky Long and say, look at all the success he's had. He's had a bunch of, you know, I think he's had 3 or 4 10-plus win seasons at San Diego State. Okay. Mm-hmm. He promoted him, right? He didn't have to go out and find the guy. He said, okay, good, you're head coach, when Brady Hoke took off. So, yeah, it's not that you can't give him credit for recognizing there's a guy right here in the building that can do that, but it's also not conducting a national search here. There have been a lot of names come across the waves here. And again, I don't know who, like I said, the people that I know that are most connected, including some big donors at Missouri, have no idea which way this is going to go. So credit to Jim Sterk for that. But the names that are being thrown out right now, Will Healy and Jim McElwain recently, Lane Kiffin, which sounds like, you know, as he was, as the start of the search sounded like he was a legit candidate, and now it sounds like they may have never even spoken. You can go down the list here, Will Fritz. There's a lot of you. Luke Fickle's name has been thrown around, although I have been told that he has no interest at all in Missouri. Norvell's name has been thrown around. I've been told he has zero interest in Missouri. So there's a list of guys here. The question is, who is the guy that Jim Sterk have had in mind that is guaranteed to be better than Barry Odom, who was on a very SEC-friendly, I should say, a team-friendly contract for being an SEC school? He had the lowest buyout in the SEC, but you can't see Derek Mason's because it's a private school. Mm-hmm. But he had the lowest in the SEC by like three times. I think the next closest buyout, I told you, it was $2.85 million. The next closest guy was like $9 million, right? So it was a contract that, remember, he got a raise and an extension last year. The dude signed an extension last offseason, and they bought him out the next year for $2.85 million. So it was school-friendly deal as you could possibly put together for a guy that had 4 wins, then 7 wins, then 8 wins, and then 6 wins. It's the first coach in school history that has ever been fired after winning enough games to be bowl eligible for 3 straight years. I think it's the first coach to ever be 500 or better and fired in Mizzou history. So you get on the list of things, and you're like, okay, like, I get it. I understand that Jim Sterk doesn't want to go down with the ship with the captain that he didn't help pick. I get that. If you think the ship's going down and you got to make a change, I get it. What I don't get is choosing to change captains if you have no idea that there's a better captain. Do you want to guarantee that the ship's going down if you don't know who the replacement is and you just got to go get a guy? Is Brian Harsin the guy? I think a lot of Missouri fans could buy that. Mm-hmm. I think Harsin would be a guy that people could get on board with. The question is, does he have any interest in Missouri? He's being paid $1.7 million right now to coach Boise State. I imagine he could get a raise. He won't get a raise to the money that Missouri could offer. Missouri should be offering between $4 and $4.5 million. Boise State can't put that together. But Missouri also right now is, you know, of the jobs up, I think it's probably a better job than Arkansas and Ole Miss. Not because it's more well-funded. It's not. Not because the fan support is better. It's not. It's because they play in the SEC East, and Tennessee has been down, although it appears they're on their way up now. And Florida's been up and down. Hell, Missouri, before this season, beat them by 21 points in the Swamp when they were a top 10 team. Missouri hadn't had a ton of trouble with Florida. They've pretty much split with them since they joined the conference. You know, Georgia's tough, but that's one game a year. And Arkansas sucks, and they're your crossover game. So it's a hell of a schedule if you want to come succeed somewhere. That's it. That is the reason. So for job openings, it's in the SEC. You're in the premier conference in America, and you get an easier schedule than you're going to get in the West. So that is the lure. Now, what you don't like is attendance that's been suffering, fan support that's not been great, a school that's operating under sanctions. I mean, there's a strong argument to be made that you wait one more year and allow somebody to come in with a completely full slate of scholarships and of 7 weeks recruiting ban. I mean, I don't know. There's still been some question about when you can use those. You can spread those out throughout the year. Missouri doesn't have a coach right now, so they're not recruiting anybody. Can you start the clock now and say, hell, we're not recruiting? Can you use it? I don't know the answers, but I know it's a very complex mess to be starting right now when you could have waited until next season to do it. And also giving the guy the go-ahead that has spent 20-plus years dedicating his life to Missouri, and that is Barry Odom.
So this is kind of a broad question. I don't know if you can really nail it down or not. I guess it's supposed to be a difficult question, but what kind of coach, in your mind, you know, as a former player, very familiar with the program, what kind of coach does Missouri need to be successful in the SEC, in your mind?
That is a great question. And the only guy that's done it, well, obviously in the SEC, but Gary Pinkel succeeded very quickly in the SEC in just his first 3 years. But, you know, the guy that can succeed at Missouri is a guy that can – look, if Missouri is honest with themselves, it's probably historically – outside of 1960, right? In the 60s, I think Missouri was the winningest school in the 1960s. That was a hell of a long time ago. Missouri's going to get over that. So it's not the 1960s anymore. If you go past that, in recent years, let's say the last this millennium, okay? Missouri's probably, if you take it as a whole, a top 35 team. You make an argument for top 30. But top 35, certainly. And if you take 2007 to 2014, they're a top 15 team. They won 10-plus games five times. They had at least a share of a division title five times, played for four conference championships. I mean, that was a hell of a team. Finished the top five twice. That was a hell of a run for them. But historically, Missouri is a top 35 program. They're honest with themselves. And they recruit like that. Okay, Missouri, if you go look at their rankings, when they're recruiting well, they'll have the occasional outlier of a top 25 class. You'll have 21. Okay, I think Gary Pinkel's best class ever was 21. You'll have, you know, okay, you're in 24 or whatever. And every so often, like Barry Odom's first year, I think it was like 49 or something like that. Okay, but most of the time, they're right about 35. And what great Missouri coaches can do, what Gary Pinkel was able to do, is identify a strength coach like Pat Ivey, who was my strength coach at Missouri, mm-hmm. who can take a kid who, we'll use Michael Agnew as an example. Michael Agnew was from Lubbock, Texas, and he was just a dude, man. I mean, he was 6'6", nice, you know, nice, long, tight end body, but he was just a dude. In fact, he had 7 total catches in his first 2 seasons. Combined, 7. And his third year of development under Pat Ivey and everybody else. Like Andy Hill was the wide receiver tight end coach, and Gary Pinkel obviously is the one who created all this. But his third year, he became a freaking behemoth. He had 90 catches. He was first team All-American because of that development. And now the strength coach who found a guy that could broad jump like 11 foot 2 inches and could run you over and could block, and it was mean than hell. And it was a strength coach that understood that this is what it takes to develop things. And there was a lot more to it, right? Pat Ivey was a lifelong Missouri guy who ended up being a casualty of the protest at Missouri. He should still be at the school. Basically, Missouri, anybody who was involved in the school outside of Barry Odom, really, I think there was really three people involved. I shouldn't say involved, but that were still at the program. Andy Hill, Barry Odom, and Cornell Ford. Those three guys are the only people really still around at all that were at Missouri in 2015. Missouri made a decision to basically cut ties with anybody that had anything to do with that protest. And so Pat Ivey was a casualty of that. I still maintain that was one of the reasons that Barry Odom was fired, because, you know, look, Pat Ivey, when I was there, the Chiefs tried to take him from Missouri and hire him as their strength coach. Routinely, we had NFL teams coming to Missouri to try to steal our strength staff because he was that good. And not only that, he went back and got his PhD in sports psychology so that he could teach us how to think and actually teach classes on that. We would go and sit down and, in the summertime, he would stand up in the class and we would have I think a lot of schools are doing this now, but we would have like classroom time that he would teach us about, you know, positive affirmations and sports psychology. And that is how Missouri's got to be ahead of the game. And so you have to find a coach that can create that and take athletes that are really only top 35, you know, class recruits and turn them into first round picks. Missouri did that for a long time. Shane Ray was a 3-star. Sean Witherspoon was a 2-star, right? I'm naming a bunch of first-round picks here. Ziggy Hood was a two-star. William Moore, I think, was a three-star. It's like, you know, down the list, Alden Smith was a three-star. You're naming a bunch of cats that Missouri went and found. Denari Alexander was a two-star out of Marlin, Texas, that they accidentally recruited. They were going to recruit a lineman. Seriously, they were going to recruit a lineman from his school, and the coach that went down there to go take a look at him said, who the hell is that kid? And they recruited him, and he was the best receiver in the country his senior year in 2009. Had 113 catches and 17 touchdowns, and he was unstoppable. That was after, I think, four knee surgeries, multiple blown ACLs, and the kid was that good. They just went and found him. Like, who is a kid? Go develop him and make him the guy. So Missouri has to do that. They're never going to recruit like Tennessee and Alabama and Georgia and Florida. Will not happen. In fact, in the SEC, if you go look at recruiting rankings, they will likely never be better than 11. But guess what? The top 11 are all in the top 25. So if you can go be 11, that's a hell of a deal. But for where Missouri sits, they're operating in a deficit right now in the athletic department. They usually about $2 million. I think they bring in $97, $98 million, and they spend about $100. And that's what they've been the last few years. They're operating at a deficit, and you know they typically, again, don't recruit that well. You got to go find a coach that loves Missouri like Gary Pinkel did. You know, what year was this then? What year did Loy Carr leave? Was that 2010-11, right in there? Gary Pinkel had a flight booked to Michigan to go interview for that job, and they were going to offer him the job, and he said, I can't leave my guys. And he canceled the flight and never went. Like, that's, first of all, how the hell did you decide that? Second of all, he was a Missouri guy, right? He came from Toledo, played at Kent State with Nick Saban and, you know, all them guys, and came from Toledo, and, you know, like, he just loves Missouri. That's who he is. So you got to find a guy like that, and you've got to find a guy who understands how to develop. Now, the difference between what he had and what Barry Odom had was the support from his athletic director. Mike Alden, who was the athletic director of Missouri when I was there, and an unbelievable guy. I love the dude. He stood by Gary Pinkel and banked his job on it. If Gary Pinkel doesn't succeed, I'm not going to succeed. So I'm standing right here. Then he had the full support of the AD. And nobody was going to fire Jim Stirk if Barry Odom had another year. And they decided he wanted to go with his own guy. So whoever this guy is needs full support from everybody. I don't think Barry Odom ever really had that. And they have to find a way to develop guys that were not highly recruited to go beat guys that were highly recruited, because that's what they're going to be facing in the SEC.
So I believe Jim Stirk, during his presser where he announced the decision to let go of Odom and everything, he noted that Missouri should be like a top 25 team and everything like that. And, you know, we all know what Barry Odom did. He was, I'd say he's about a 500 coach in the SEC. He's slightly over 500 overall. If that's not the expectation at Missouri, do you have a good feel for what the expectation is at Missouri with this new coach? I mean, what's going to be good enough for Jim Stirk?
I think it's a different set of expectations, right? Because nobody is expected to win, really. Unless you're at a blue blood, you're not going to win in year one. Whoever takes over Arkansas next year is going to suck really bad. There's very little you can do. I mean, there's just no talent on that roster. They won two games this year. They're awful. I think the expectations are different. You get some extra time because you're starting over. They're not your guys. There's a lot of reasons, we'll say, but excuses at the beginning. These aren't my guys, not my system, just getting comfortable, I got to get my guys in place and all that kind of stuff. So, Jim Stirk's been here a few years already. He's going to have Jim Stirk's support. And what is ultimately reasonable in year 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, hopefully they make it that long, is I think Gary Pinkel, and this is another thing that Jim Stirk cited. They said, basically, he added this just at the end, but he said, Missouri, this is a team that should be in the top 25 every year. We're a top 25 program. Gary Pinkel proved that. Okay, but when you're talking about what Missouri can be, that's great. That's not necessarily who Missouri is historically. Like, you can't cite the greatest coach in modern Missouri history and say, this is who we are. Mm-hmm. Okay, well then, if that's true, then Alabama, when Nick Saban dies, should still win national championships every single year because that's who Alabama is, right? That's obviously not that. Like Tennessee, right? Bill Fuller won a national championship at one point. They should win national championships every year. That's who they are. Not mm-hmm. really. That's really not true for anybody, first of all. Tennessee is a great school. I think Tennessee is a top 15 program historically in college football history. Right now, they're not. Okay, like, you know, and go find the coach that can bring you closer. But, you know, if we're saying, well, we think that Tennessee should be competing for SEC championship every year, national championships every 4 or 5 years, then when they just finished in the top 25, you fire your coach. Okay, well, if you fire your coach every, you know, when he's number 23 and you think he should be number 8, if he's number 23 4 out of 5 years and then he's number 8 1 year and you fire him during those 4 years, you're an idiot. Right, you don't fire coaches to get you in the top 25. Barry Odom actually had Missouri ranked last year before they lost the bowl game, and then after a 5-1 start this year, they were ranked again. Back to the question here: who is Missouri, and what are the expectations? I think it's great to have expectations that are high, and however, I think that's miscategorized a little bit. I think your hopes and your expectations should be separated to some degree, and if your baseline should be different than your expectations. Meaning, look, if Missouri is not making bowl games, that's a problem. Missouri should be making bowl games. What are we doing here if you're not winning at least 6 games a year as a 500 coach? But if you're winning 8 games a year, okay, you're still probably 8 games of the bowl game. You're still losing 5. Hell, you're not doing that well. But should you be firing coaches who win 8 games a year? I don't think so at Missouri. I think the hope for Missouri is that you win, you know, once you get going. So say whoever the next coach is, it makes it 5 years. By year 5, I think your baseline is you're going to have goofy years. Like, look, Gary Pinkel in 2012, I was on that team, went 5-7. And then the next year, he went to the SEC championship game. You're going to have goofy outlier years. But mm-hmm. your general baseline for you got a decent team out should be 8 wins, and you should hope to jump up in the 10, 11, 12 range once out of every 4 years, maybe 3-4 years. And then you should hope that the stars align every, what it's been for Missouri, every 7 years in recent years, and you can compete for a conference championship. And when you're competing for a conference championship in this conference, you're competing for a national title. That is what your hope should be as Missouri. Now, Missouri fans won't admit that, but hell, there's not a bigger Missouri fan than I am. Hell, I'm one of the people, and I don't mean this as a negative to the fan because, like, you know, you got genetics and stuff, but I'm one of the few people that support Missouri that actually went out there and frickin' did it. There's nobody that loves Missouri more than I did, okay? I was one of the few guys that may end up with CTE because I went over the middle and I wouldn't back down from a guy that was 3 times my size and wanted to kill me, all right? There's nobody that wants Missouri succeeding more than I do. But I also don't want to go around firing coaches because they have a bad year. And I kind of think that's what Missouri just did.
Yeah, and that is an interesting point you brought up with Tennessee, because that's who Philip Fulmer was. He played at Tennessee. He loved Tennessee. You get rid of him. You kick him out. You bring in this hot assistant from the NFL named Lane Kiffin. Then a year later, because he doesn't give a shit about the school, he's gone. And it's damn sent Tennessee down to a hole that they still haven't climbed out of. So that's an interesting nugget there. One of the last things I got for you here, TJ, I wanted to ask you this. Are there any members of the current coaching staff? I know this is a tough question as well to answer, but because we don't know who the new coach is, we don't know what the system he's going to bring and what have you, but are there any coaches, assistant coaches on the current staff that you'd really like to see the new coach bring back to, you know, maybe just bring some stability or maybe a really good recruiter? Thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's two guys that have been holdovers in recent years. So Cornell Ford came from Toledo with Gary Pinkel, and he was a holdover to Barry Odom. And one of the primary reasons is because he recruits St. Louis. Now, they went to a little bit different. The way it was when I was being recruited was that you had coaches who were assigned to an area. And that's largely changed outside of a couple guys, because you still want guys in state who have relationships with all the high schools and stuff to continue those relationships. But right, it's like if you go get a kid out of Plano, Texas, 1 year, the chance of you getting a kid out of that same school are not very high, right? So it's okay if the way the most the SEC and the way that Barry Odom decided to do it after a little while was the tight ends coach goes and recruits tight ends. The the D-line coach goes and recruits the defensive line. That's not how it was. In fact, Cornell Ford was the corners coach, and he recruited St. Louis, and I was a wide receiver. Okay, well, I just, you know, he was my recruiting coach. And eventually, I met the guy who was Andy Hill, who was in charge of receivers. That Cornell Ford is still largely in charge of St. Louis, or was, because of all his relationships. Andy Hill was in charge of Kansas City. That changed a little bit, but he still had all the relationships in Kansas City. They were both holdovers from the Pinkel staff to the Odom staff. Andy Hill actually was in the Larry Smith era. You want to go back that far. So he is largely invincible. That guy is Mr. Mizzou, and he has just continued to stay at Mizzou while everybody else gets fired. So I would like to see both of them. They're both really good guys. They're both good recruiters. And in the St. Louis area in particular, I don't know why this is, but Kansas City and St. Louis, both fairly large metro areas. Missouri, St. Louis has the 21st ranked media market in the country, right? It's a pretty decent sized city, mid-tier. It's not obviously New York and Houston, but it's fairly big size. Kansas City is not too far back. They're right around 30. Okay. But there are like three or four times as many big time recruits that come out of St. Louis as there is Kansas City. I don't know why this is. It's just the truth. And people think I'm biased, you know, because I'm from St. Louis. I just go look at rivals.com and 247 Sports and all that. And you go look up and there's a you know, Division I guy out of Kansas City. There's like seven of them and there's 26 in St. Louis. I don't know why this is, but it's true. And Missouri has, the University of Missouri has struggled to figure out how it's happened in the St. Louis market over the years. And so there's a lot of background to this, but one of the greatest things that Barry Odom was able to do that this new coach needs to try to pick up and run with, and that's not really how it works, you're going to go create your own relationships, is he was able to mend the fences with the black coaches in St. Louis. And for whatever reason, there has just not been good relationships with Missouri and the black community in St. Louis. Obviously, anybody's paying attention to the athletes out there, about 75% of them are black. So if you don't have a good relationship with the black community in a certain city, that ain't going to go well for you when you're trying to recruit these kids. Mm-hmm. So Odom was able to go in, and he actually had like a black coaches summit at one point where he got all, you know, like they got all the black coaches in the area together. And he said, how do we fix this? What do we do here? That I don't know what, how the relationship has been tarnished between the university and you guys, and why you don't maybe trust your kids to come here. I'm here to fix it because I want to take care of your kids. I promise you I'll do everything I can to make them successful and give them really good lives after football as best I can. And so that really went a long way. And they actually broke through. There's a few schools in Missouri that really pump out a lot of Division I kids. One of them is East St. Louis, right on the Illinois side there. And there are two others that go crazy. And he actually had, Odom did. Now, two of them have backed out since this time, maybe all three. But he had a kid from each school that was committed to come to Missouri this year. He had broken through this wall of whatever it was that was keeping kids from coming to Missouri. Not that they didn't look. It's like, you know, Blaine Gabbert came from Missouri. He's a five-star kid. Terry Beckner Jr. was a five-star kid. He came from East St. Louis. You know, it's Sheldon Richardson came from St. Louis. He's a five-star kid. It's not like Missouri couldn't get them. But there was a lot of kids over the years that you missed out on. And you'd say, what? This is too many to be leaving. What's the deal here? And Odom was able to break through that. And Cornell Ford was a big part of that. Cornell Ford is a black guy who is incredibly relational. He's great at making relationships and having the support of the head coach. Odom was the guy who was spearheading this whole thing. They were able to break through a lot of that. And the new coach is going to have to figure out whatever it is that Odom figured out there. Because that was starting to move, and if you can get the guys out of St. Louis, I mean, hell, Ezekiel Elliott's from St. Louis, and his parents went to Mizzou, and you lost them to Ohio State. You know, so you've got to figure out how to close the deal on some of these cats that can be game changers. So anyway, the question is about the guys. That's the guys, Cornell Ford and Andy Hill, both really high relational guys that the kids love, that can coach their butts off to, and they'd be really smart of the next coach to keep both those guys.
All right, well, he's TJ Moe, former standout Missouri receiver, co-host of 590 The Fan, KFNS Radio there in St. Louis. You can follow him on YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram, all the same name. I love that you've done that. TJ Moe, the number 28. TJ, I really appreciate you hopping on with us here, giving us some insight into this Missouri situation, because kind of like you said, this is one where I got no idea who they're targeting, who they're looking at. We're seeing all this speculation, but I really appreciate the insight. It means a lot.
Yeah, man, anytime. Happy to jump on with you. Appreciate your work, certainly on Twitter, but the website and all that. So happy to jump on with you anytime. All right, Mike, take care, man.
Take it easy, TJ. Thanks again.
You got it. See ya.
All right, some terrific insight there from TJ Moe. Really appreciate him hopping on there without Shane. Kind of needed someone to go back and forth with, though, so I thought he'd be a great one to do it. And we'll start right there in Missouri, where, you know, the latest rumor, TJ Moe kind of hit on it there, but Jim McElwain, former Florida coach, current, I believe he's at Central Michigan. He's only been there 1 year. He's already got Central Michigan in their conference championship game, if I'm not mistaken. Quite a turnaround there for old Bucktooth Shark lover. Hell of a job there, though. It's going to be really easy. Hell, I've done it. I've seen everybody doing it, making fun of McElwain and the shark image and everything. But I know his tenure there at Florida, you know, that was just a wild damn ending. I can't recall a single coach that's ever went to back-to-back SEC championship games and basically fired the next year. But that's what happened with the fake death threats and everything. But putting all that lost season aside, I know that's incredibly difficult to do because you can't just erase it. But I always thought McElwain did a hell of a job, because if you think back to his first two Florida teams, the Gators were not even close to the best team in the division. They found a way to win it both years, although they did lose to Tennessee that 1 year. But they still won the division 2016. So when you see stuff like that, you see what he did. He had a little bit of success there at Colorado State. That obviously got him the Florida job, and he worked with Nick Saban. I believe he won some national titles there in Alabama. So now he's doing it again at Central Michigan. I'm not saying Missouri should hire this guy, but, you know, all the jokes aside, which, like I said, I've made him myself, I think McElwain, I think he can do a lot worse than him. Yeah, I think the keys there is how is he going to manage his strength and conditioning? How is he going to manage the recruiting? Because those are two areas where he did not do a great job at all in Gainesville. He inherited some real talent there from Will Muschamp, but he did a hell of a lot with them, I thought, the first 2 years. So, like I said, Missouri could do a hell of a lot worse than old Bucktooth here. All right, skipping down to Tennessee. Big news here out of Tennessee. Juwan Jennings suspended for the first half of Tennessee's bowl game. Of course, we don't know what bowl game that's going to be coming out here on Sunday, but it's almost a good thing Shane's not here, because I can only imagine the expletives he'd let fly on this one. But, you know, very interesting decision, because I read something earlier today, I believe it was from Adam Sparks of the Tennessean, that, you know, the SEC had looked into this incident, and I don't think they issued any kind of statement or anything. And then all of a sudden, later in the afternoon here on Wednesday, announced Juwan Jennings suspended for the first half. There will be no review. Tennessee's accepted it. And this is all stemming from, if anybody missed it, there was a video of Juwan Jennings stepping on a player, Vanderbilt player's face. The Vanderbilt player did not have a helmet. A really bizarre sequence of events, because it wasn't as if Juwan stomped on dude's face. I mean, if you're trying to stomp someone, you're lifting your leg, you're stomping on him. You know, it's pretty clear cut. That's not what I saw here. It did look for sure like the cleat did come in contact with the player's face. Juwan Jennings was not looking at the Vanderbilt player, from what I could tell. So, really gray area there. There was no flag during the game. Of course, it occurred on the sidelines, so maybe the refs couldn't see it, what have you. But according to the SEC, there is a rule in place. I'll read you the rule here. If subsequent review of the game by a conference reveals plays involving flagrant personal fouls that game officials did not call, the conference may impose sanctions prior to the next scheduled game. So that's the rule they're citing. That's why they're suspending Juwan Jennings. I don't necessarily agree with this one, because, like I said, unless maybe they reached out to Tennessee, maybe they reached out to Juwan and he admitted he did this, but I have no knowledge of that taking place, and without that, I'm not really sure how you suspend a kid for that. But I don't know. This is one that's pissed off all nation. I kind of understand that, but I think Vanderbilt's a little pissed off too. So I don't know. We'll see how that goes in the bowl game. And Juwan Jennings will miss the first half of it. Hopefully he finishes his career strong, finishes it on the right note. That'll be something to monitor looking forward. All right. So jumping out to Colorado State, wanted to make this quick note, but former Georgia offensive coordinator, he's former now Colorado State head coach Mike Bobo out at Colorado State. Why we're bringing that up? South Carolina very interested in hiring Mike Bobo potentially as an offensive coordinator. I've also heard the name Chad Morris attached to that South Carolina offensive coordinator job. I think Mike Bobo, for everything that his ties to the Georgia program, played with Will Muschamp, if I'm not mistaken, obviously had a ton of success there at Georgia. I know some of the fans, maybe it was always a popular thing telling Dan Bobo to run the ball, but hell, they were setting SEC records through the passing game. They had quarterbacks, receivers, all going to the NFL, running backs too. So Bobo, he caught a lot of shit there in Athens, but I always thought he did a really good job. And hell, when he left, that was the end of Mark Richt. So I think revisionist history says that Mike Bobo did a good job at Georgia, and I think that would be a hell of a hire for Will Muschamp if he can get him. Not saying it's going to happen, but he's out there now. That's the call I think you got to make. I've seen a lot of South Carolina fans upset at this. They don't like that idea, but it's really hard for me to fathom who you're going to get in that has SEC experience, that has played in the SEC, has done well in the SEC. He's from the state of Georgia, so you're going to do well in recruiting. He's a good recruiter. On top of all that, you really got to look at it like this. Will Muschamp, everybody knows he's sitting on a hot seat. So if South Carolina has a bad year next year, he's gone. Muschamp is gone. His entire staff's going to go too. You're telling me you're going to hire an elite offensive coordinator to come in there knowing he may only have 1 year? It's not going to happen. Trust me. Look at Butch Jones, his final year at Tennessee. He had to promote Larry Scott. A little bit different situation, but Gus Malzahn, he's on a hot seat all offseason. He's not getting an offensive coordinator coming there. I know he's calling the plays, but he had to hire Kenny Dillingham. So these are the type of candidates you're talking about. You want to hire the next Kenny Dillingham, or you want to hire Mike Bobo, who's been coaching a long time in this league, experience in the league. You know he can recruit someone that Will Muschamp can turn over the offense at and have complete confidence in. Because this is make no mistake, this is Will Muschamp's job on the line. You can maybe hire Chad Morris. I looked how that turned out to the Razorbacks. And Chad Morris won also. I kind of questioned that one as well, because going head-to-head against his good buddy Dabo in the state of South Carolina, recruiting against Dabo, coaching against Dabo, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. So if I'm South Carolina looking at Mike Bobo, I think that's got to be an ideal fit there. All right, last thing I've got before I hop off here, a little bit of a shorter one without Shane, but CBS has announced that Gus Malzahn joining the broadcast for the SEC Championship game on Saturday. I always love when they do this. Obviously, Gus Malzahn, he's played Georgia and LSU, so he'll give some insight that very few people are going to have. He'll be breaking down the game at halftime, probably leading up to it, and a little bit in postgame. So looking forward to that. Always appreciate these coaches' insight, particularly active coaches, because they know it better than anybody else. So I really love when CBS does this. I think they're making another good choice here by bringing Gus Malzahn. It seems like every damn year, if Gus ain't in the SEC Championship, he's helping to analyze it for CBS. So one way or another, Gus Malzahn finds his way to Atlanta. And hell, it's going to help recruiting too. You got to imagine, all eyes are on the SEC Championship game. If you're an Auburn fan, Auburn recruit, watching TV, seeing Gus Malzahn there, that doesn't hurt either. So all around good idea here for Auburn. Good idea for CBS. I just love when they do this. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this one. Shane will be back for our Friday episode where we make our official picks for the SEC Championship game. Looking forward to that one. Should be a great game, and that's going to do it for this edition. A little bit of a shorter one, but appreciate everyone logging on here, and appreciate everyone joining the podcast. And if you made it this far, if you wouldn't mind going just a step further, giving us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, that really does help the podcast out. All right, guys, catch you on the next one.
Thank you.